Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, September 28th, 2024. Midland couple opens Creperia and A&I Snack Shack. Jonathan and Celia Lozano started selling homemade crepes to their friends and family before deciding to open a Facebook page dedicated to the business venture. Now they are celebrating the opening of their brick-and-mortar located in the Summit Center. Creperia A&I, named after the co-owner's children, offers crepes, frappes, smoothies, and more to their customers. However, the husband and wife duo didn't start their crepe-selling business with a crepe recipe. Quote, Celia made pancakes with an oat base and spinach, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, she had a recipe for those type of pancakes. After my son was born, she discovered crepes through TikTok, end quote. Although Celia and Jonathan now had a recipe for crepes, recreating the dish with their own ingredients wasn't as easy. Quote, traditional crepes are made with processed flour. And we used an oat-based flour, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, it took us a long time to perfect the recipe because crepes are very delicate, end quote. After offering their crepes to friends and family, the duo decided to start marketing their homemade crepes through social media. Quote, people started ordering, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, Celia would make the crepes and I would deliver them to our customers, end quote. Jonathan said that the creperia slowly started getting more and more customers. He added that the team members of Jimmy T's drive-thru ordered crepes from them and shared that they enjoyed their food. Similarly, Jonathan and Celia shared that they ate at Tall City Bistro and recommended it to their followers, which sparked Jimmy T's to commend them for uplifting other small businesses. Quote, Jimmy T's has over 30,000 followers, and they shared us to their followers, and we started getting more traction, end quote, Jonathan said. Although they were still based out of their home, the duo was looking for a brick and mortar to expand their business. Quote, Dennis Johnson and Matt had read previous Reporter Telegram coverage of Creperia A&I and reached out to us to see if we would be interested in being located at the Summit Center, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, we considered the food court at first, but then they suggested where we are right now, end quote. The Summit Center officially opened to the public September 12th, and Creperia A&I was ready to go. Quote, we had a soft opening just to train our staff, but it was really busy, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, we are very grateful for the Johnson and Woodard families for giving us this opportunity, end quote. The menu. The crepes are still made using Celia's oat-based recipe which includes oat flour, egg whites, and protein. For their syrups, customers can count on them being sugar-free. Quote, although our syrups are sugar-free, we do have natural sugars included with our real fruit, end quote, Jonathan said. Quote, we also use Nutella and Oreos on some of our crepes, so those have added sugar as well, end quote. Jonathan added that although they are primarily a creperie, they are also a snack shack and offer chips and with queso or botanera sauce and aguas frescas. Quote, we've gotten a lot of inquiries about savory crepes, so that's something we are looking into as well, end quote, Jonathan said. Creperia A&I offers an assortment of sweet crepes such as strawberry cream cheese with Oreos and strawberries or Nutella with strawberries and bananas. Each crepe can be ordered as an adult size or a kid size and can be topped with complimentary almond flakes and maple or chocolate syrup. They offer blueberry, strawberry, banana, or mixed flavor milkshakes. They also offer crepes frops with flavors such as blueberry, strawberry, banana, Oreos, and mazapan. Their aguas frescas come in many flavors, including lemonade, Jamaica, hibiscus, and strawberry. Creperia A&I is located at the Summit Center at 3200 Mockingbird Lane. Business hours are Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and then 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Orders can be made ahead through their website. $2 $262.5 million to man paralyzed by drunk driver. Odessa. A jury in Odessa has awarded $262.5 million to an Odessa man who was injured by a drunk driver in June of 2021. Isaac Sanchez, who was 32 years old during the time of the incident, is now a quadriplegic after he was hit from behind by a drunk driver while stopped at the intersection of Yukon and Andrews Highway in Odessa, Texas. Sanchez's attorneys, Glasheen, Vallis, and Enderman Injury Lawyers of Odessa, and the Bailey Law Firm of San Angelo, together brought the lawsuit against Lynx Food and Beverage, which does business as Lynx Bar and Grill, for over-serving the drunken driver. According to a press release from Glasheen, evidence was presented during the trial that revealed the drunken driver had been drinking most of the day at the Lynx Bar and Grill located at the Ratliff Ranch Golf Links in Odessa. In addition, the driver of the vehicle that injured Sanchez, Regilio Lujan, was also listed as part of the Odessa jury's decision. In the court documents received by the Reporter-Telegram, the jury found Lynx Food and Beverage to be 40% responsible for causing the occurrence. Lujan was found to be 60% responsible. For the breakdown of how the $262.5 million was decided upon by the jury, court documents list $13 million for physical impairment suffered in the past, $150 million for future physical impairment, $1.4 million for mental anguish already suffered, $18 million for future mental anguish, $18 million for past physical pain, $3 million for future physical pain, $1.4 million for past disfigurement, $5 million for future disfigurement, $1.3 million for past medical care expenses, $50 million for future medical care expenses, $200,000 for past loss of earnings, $1.2 million for future loss of earnings. Quote, the jury spoke very clearly last night when it told Lynx Bar and Grill and all other bars that they need to follow the rules, end quote, said attorney Chad Enderman. The Sanchez family commented after the jury's decision had been made. Quote, this isn't a problem that we want to have in our communities, end quote, Ruben Sanchez said. Quote, we have such a problem with drunk driving in Odessa, end quote. The Sanchez family also shared how life-changing the event was for their family. They said that mentally and emotionally, the incident had been very trying for the family. Quote, one of us has to stay with Isaac while the other goes to the grocery store, end quote, Ruben said during a press conference Friday afternoon. Quote, from getting him in the morning to giving him his medication to making sure he gets fed and that he has clean clothes, Isaac needs his mother and I to make sure he has all his personal needs met, end quote. The Sanchez family also said that they hope other bar owners will take the time to have their staff trained properly regarding the limit of alcoholic drinks per customer. Quote, let's not sacrifice personal gain over other people's goodwill or good health, end quote, Ruben said. Quote, I understand they, bar owners, are trying to make money, but there are rules, end quote. The trial was held in the 70th District Court of Ector County, Texas. City opts to continue growing its own greens for Hogan Park. The Midland ISD Board of Trustees recently approved a memorandum of understanding with Reeves County to sell some of the greens from Ranchland Hills before the site is cleared away to make way for the new Midland High School. While Ranchland Hills Golf Club is set to go away, the City of Midland is actively making improvements to Hogan Park. The Reporter-Telegram this week asked the city if it was interested in purchasing greens from Ranchland Hills. Quote, Midland ISD quoted us $150,000 for all the greens. But when we worked out the unit price, even for a few, we determined it's far cheaper for us to continue growing our own, end quote, a city spokesperson said. The city has its eye on making improvements at Hogan Park, including a $6 million upgrade to its irrigation system and the installation of a reverse osmosis water treatment system, tabbed to cost $3 million, the spokesperson said. Quote, those two projects will improve the quality of the grass on the course, including the greens, end quote. Other improvements will include bathroom and clubhouse renovations. The entire cost will come from an increase of rates at Hogan Park. Private golf club Nueva Vista in West Midland closed in 2023 and will be the location of new property developments, including Zoo Midland. Ranchland Hills was purchased by Midland ISD in early 2019 and is the future site of the new Midland High School after the passage of the 2023 school bond. Work is expected to start on the property in summer 2025. Hogan Park is the lone municipal golf course in Midland. However, the county has expressed interest in building its own course for the public. A recent study by THK Associates and initiated by Midland County recommended a 27-hole golf course be built with additional support buildings and amenities. Texas rig count rises, though U.S. count slumps. Drilling activity slumped for a second consecutive week as September and the third quarter came to an end. Oil field services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count fell one rig to 587, the lowest since early September, and down 36 rigs, or 6% below the 623 rigs counted last year. In the third quarter, the rig count rose by 6, the first quarterly increase since 2022. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil fell by 4 rigs to 484, the first time oil rigs had been laid down since mid-August, and the biggest cut since late June. It's also 18 rigs below the 502 seeking crude last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 3 rigs to 99, the highest level since late July, but down 17 rigs from 116 last year. Texas bucked the national trend, adding one rig for 277 active rigs, though down 27 from 304 last year. New Mexico fell two rigs to 104. Louisiana 1 joined New Mexico as a producing state to see a decline, while Texas was the only producing state to see a gain. The Permian Basin followed the national trend, dropping one rig for 306 rigs at work in the region, six fewer than the 312 reported last year. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 51 rigs, down one for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, was second with 49 rigs, also down one for the week. Martin County had 31 rigs at work within county lines, down one for the week. Right behind was Reeves County with 30 rigs, up one. Midland County had 25 rigs, up one. Loving County reported 19 rigs for a third week. Reagan and Upton counties each had 14 rigs, and Howard County had 10 rigs for a second week. Energy-dedicated software as a service firm Enveris said its U.S. rig count for the week ended September 20th was unchanged at 633 rigs, down 43 rigs or 6% from 676 rigs a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was 184, down 9 rigs from the previous week, and 224 rigs or 55% from 408 rigs last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 5 rigs to 94 and is down 72 rigs or 43% from 166 rigs a year ago. ExxonMobil remains atop the list of 10 most active operators by rig count, with 40 rigs, up one rig for the week. Second place, ConocoPhillips, was unchanged at 29 rigs, and Occidental Petroleum added a rig for 26 rigs. Enveris said its Permian Basin rig count for the week ended September 20th was down one rig to 304 rigs. That's 21 rigs, or 6% below the 325 counted last year. The most active play, the Delaware, was down one rig to 173, seven rigs or 4% below the 180 counted last year. The Midland Basin saw 115 rigs during the week, up two rigs from the previous week, but down seven rigs or 6% from 122 last year. Looking at trailing 30-day drilling permits, the Permian had 786 permits as of the week ended September 6th, down from 817 the previous week, but up from 745 the previous year. Enveris reported the Permian had 116 frac crews as of the week of September 6th, up from 95 a week earlier, but below the 144 crews active a year earlier. Oil prices drop on rising OPEC supply, weak China demand. Rising supplies from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allied nations, combined with soft oil demand from China, weighed on oil prices this week. At the same time, Hurricane Helene and falling gas storage injections gave a boost to natural gas prices. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange. at sharp drops of $1.87 Wednesday and $2.02 Thursday, overwhelm Tuesday's $1.19 increase. Prices gained 51 cents, or 0.75%, Friday to close the week at $68.18, down from $71.92 at last Friday's close, and a 5% weekly decline. Natural gas futures rose 3 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, opening the trading week with an 18-cent jump. Prices gained as Hurricane Helene prompted the shutting in of offshore wells in the Gulf of Mexico. Additional support came from data showing short storage injections in July, August, and so far in September were at record lows, according to federal energy data going back to 1997. Prices gained 15 cents Friday to close at $2.904 per MCF, up from $2.436 at last Friday's close, and a 5.41% weekly gain. Quote, in recent weeks, the markets were clearly concerned over slowing economic growth, both in the U.S. and abroad. This took a toll on the stock market, oil markets, and in general, most markets. In addition, the oil markets are concerned about possible increases in OPEC production in a market that already appears to be well supplied, and where Asian demand growth appears to be slowing. End quote. Ken Waitz, president and chief executive officer of Mewbourn Oil, told the Reporter Telegram. He added, quote, I am encouraged by the Fed's recent rate cut and the markets bouncing back, and am gaining confidence that oil prices will stabilize in the $70 per barrel range, end quote. Commodity prices concerned respondents to the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas quarterly energy survey, which found a decline in business activity and outlooks as a result of lower oil and natural gas prices. One exploration and production executive responding to the survey commented, quote, we stand by the hypothesis that the world is swiftly running out of $60 barrels on the way to $100 plus barrels within the next 5 years. OPEC is being punished short term for ceding market share. To us, it appears to be a savvy oil storage policy. U.S. shale will decline in a similar fashion to how Hemingway went bankrupt, gradually, then all of a sudden. Why do you think very sophisticated firms worth tens of billions of dollars are selling out to the super majors for equity despite a market-leading Permian footprint? End quote. Another executive commented, quote, recent volatility has started to impact planning discussions for 2025. We have not adjusted our plan yet, but we are starting to work on potential drilling plans for a lower commodity environment, end quote. A third executive wrote, quote, natural gas production in the Permian Basin is priced well below the futures market. Several of the past months, I have received nothing or a negative adjustment to revenue for natural gas. In June, one operator paid $0.09 per million cubic feet, which is above $0 but accrues little to my revenue. I believe this situation will persist for months, if not years, end quote. An executive with an oil field service firm commented in the response, quote, the current disconnect between oil price and physical supply is worrisome. Prices are not supportive of the long-term investments needed to maintain adequate supplies through the energy transition. As a result, the current underinvestment will lead to significant inventory shortfalls in the medium term, followed by rapid price escalation. It's going to be a very bumpy ride. Again, end quote. MHS and LHS renderings unveiled, opening in 2028. Midland ISD has released updated renderings of the new Midland High and Legacy High, which are anticipated to open in August 2028. Quote, these campuses are set to improve educational spaces for students in 9th through 12th grade to be more conducive to 21st century learning and into the future, end quote, the district said in a social media post. Quote, there will be a significant expansion of core curriculum classrooms, common areas, and extracurricular spaces. The spaces will offer an environment that fosters academic excellence and extracurricular success, end quote. The district added that each school will have an academic capacity of 3,800 students that's expandable to 4,200 if needed. The new LHS will be located in West Midland near Scarber Sports Complex, and the new MHS will be located at the site of Ranchland Hills Golf Club, which MISD purchased in early 2019. The projects are part of the 2023 school bond, which voters passed in November. Not only will the new high schools be large, but MISD will undergo a complete grade reconfiguration. Currently, elementary schools serve pre-kindergarten through sixth grade. Junior highs have seventh and eighth graders. Freshman high schools teach only ninth graders. And the comprehensive high schools have grades 10 through 12. MISD will transition to a more traditional setup, with the new MHS and LHS serving kids in grades 9 through 12. Junior highs will be recategorized as middle schools and teach children in 6th through 8th grade. Elementary schools will serve pre-kindergarten through 5th grade. Groundbreaking for the new high schools is set for summer 2025. FBI, rising teen sextortion cases leading to self-harm. El Paso. The Federal Bureau of Investigation said that the issue of sextortion now has another component with targeting teenagers. During a press conference Wednesday afternoon, Special Agent Alex Bastillos said that in addition to financial sextortion, the federal agency is also seeing an increase in the number of self-harm-related cases. Quote, it affects more specifically our young, vulnerable community members. Plus sextortion and financial extortion, that unfortunately, with the advent of technology and the growth of technology, it just makes it a lot easier for our bad guys to be able to get direct access to our youth, end quote, Bastillo said. Quote, and that technology is also the venue for which they can directly address, touch, and contact our young children, end quote. Bastillos emphasized the vulnerability of youth to online predators and the need for paternal vigilance. Often the victims of sextortion are young males between the ages of 14 to 17. With the use of technology, including social media and gaming platforms, predators can easily manipulate and extort victims. Both the FBI and National Center for Missing and Exploited Children are actively addressing these issues, urging parents to report suspicious activities and educate themselves on the signs of sextortion, end quote, Bastillo said. Quote, sextortion has resulted in an alarming number of deaths by suicide, unfortunately. The victims are typically males in this form of a crime between the ages of 14 to 17. But essentially, any child with technology, with internet access, can become a victim, end quote, Bastillos explained. Quote, there have been alarming suicides, as I said, identified in male victims of financial extortion, end quote. Teenage victims often believe that their images or private videos will not be shared online. Next, the perpetrators tell victims that this is going to be shared with friends and other connections across the internet. As far as child predators, the FBI says most are usually located outside of the U.S., primarily in West African countries, for example, Nigeria or the Ivory Coast, or Southeast Asian countries such as the Philippines. Most of the predators are motivated by financial gain and target victims using social media or different public platforms. Quote, predators often pretend to be related to the victim in some sense, whether it's their age or have similar interests or they live in the same area, end quote, Bastillo said. Quote, at the end of the day, on the internet, you can become whoever you want to be. You can lie. You can create fake profiles, end quote. Essentially, predators use these social media profiles as misrepresentations where they appear to be friends of the victims and target several groups of children who may appear to know each other. Quote, so you don't only have that one victim. You have a slew of victims just because of the friends that they're connected with, end quote, Bastillos added. Typically, these predators create profiles that resemble the profiles of teenage girls. Quote, predators sometimes hack legitimate accounts and take them over as well, end quote, he said. Quote, once they gain that trust of the victim, they go ahead and they say, well, let's move over to a messaging platform. It will be easier for us to connect, for us to talk to one another, end quote. From there, Bastillo says the financial extortion side is immediate. Quote, as soon as the victim says something inappropriate, the perpetrators have what they want, end quote, he explained. Quote, additionally, predators sometimes create images to elicit a response from the child, for example, a fake news headline about the arrest of the child or a collage containing sexually explicit materials, or they will draft fake social media posts, end quote. The next step is predators convince the victims that their images or videos will be distributed to their friends, family, and other contacts. Quote, for a teenager, that's life-altering, end quote, Bastillos commented. Quote, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has gone out there to put this to the forefront, just as the FBI has, but now we are seeing another trend, end quote. The FBI is warning of publicly violent online groups that are deliberately targeting minor victims in an attempt to extort them. Quote, these groups use threats and manipulations to control the victims into reporting or live streaming self-harm, end quote, Bastillos said. Quote, the perpetrators want vain or fame they can get. The footage is often circulated among members to extort poor victims and further extend control, end quote. Groups that are being targeted are typically minors between the ages of 8 and 17 years old, members of the LGBTQ plus community, racial minorities, and those who struggle with a variety of mental health issues. Quote, for some reason, it's clear to see that they are going to target these individuals because if victims are having mental health issues, they are seen as easier victims that predators can control, and some of these victims have depression or suicidal tendencies, end quote, Bastillos said. Quote, the groups using extortion and black belt tactics, such as threatening to SWAT or dox them, end quote. Parents or guardians can report any suspected cases of sextortion or online exploitation to the FBI through tips.fbi.gov. As far as the warning signs of extortion, sextortion, Bastillos advised that parents need to be aware. Quote, victims don't talk anymore, they are very irritable, end quote, Bastillos said. Quote, some people might chalk it up to kids being kids, teenagers, but it goes a different way. They're not taking care of themselves, such as eating habits and sleeping. Also, victims are dropping out of activities that they are usually involved in, end quote. Oftentimes, scars will be present in patterns on the victim's bodies, especially after these scars heal. Quote, you are going to see fresh cuts, end quote, Bastillos explained. Quote, you are going to see bruises or bite marks, carvings such as word symbols on the skin, end quote. Parents should also look to see what clothing their children are wearing. Are the clothes appropriate for the weather season, or are the clothes hiding a cut or scar? For the El Paso region, federal officials say they are seeing one or two reports of these types of cases per day. Federal authorities also say that parents are not tech-savvy enough to recognize the channels and platforms that their children are using. Quote, this is an emerging threat, end quote, Bastillos said. Quote, it's a worldwide problem, and not just in the U.S. It's affecting over 23 countries and increasing, end quote. Seven Midland ISD students recognized. Named National Merit Commended Students. Seven Midland ISD students have been recognized as commended students by the National Merit Scholarship Program. According to National Merit, students who are designated, quote, commended students, end quote, earn high scores on the PSAT or National Merit Scholarship qualifying test and are among the top 3% of all participants nationwide. Although commended students are no longer in the running for the National Merit Scholarships, they can be candidates for special scholarships offered by National Merit's corporate sponsors. MISD's commended students each received letters of commendation from National Merit through their high schools. National Merit has recognized 10 total MISD students, which includes three semifinalists. Only two MISD students were recognized in 2022, and only four MISD students were recognized last year. This year's commended students are Eliana Aguila, Midland High School, Aiden Sanchez, Midland High School, Ryan Rounds, Legacy High School, Paula Padron, Young Women's Leadership Academy, Hannah Rusum, Young Women's Leadership Academy, Sumi Schwartz, Early College High School, Mackenzie Dunaway, Early College High School. MISD stated that 64 students also recently earned the College Board's National Recognition Award. Quote, the achievements of these students are a testament to their hard work and dedication, end quote, said Amanda Melkor, MISD's Executive Director of Secondary Teaching and Learning. Quote, being named a commended student is an incredible accomplishment that will enhance college and career prospects and raise the profile of MISD academics as a whole, end quote. Texas senators push for nuclear waste recycling study. plans to store high-level radioactive waste at Waste Control Specialist's existing low-level radioactive waste disposal site in Andrews County has led to legislation calling for the study of recycling spent nuclear fuel. Quote, it ties directly into the efforts to store nuclear waste at the facility in Andrews County, end quote. A spokesperson for Senator Ted Cruz told the Reporter-Telegram. The Texas Republican, along Senator Martin Heinrich, Democrat, New Mexico, have introduced the Advancing Research in Nuclear Fuel Recycling Act. The legislation requires the Department of Energy and National Academy of Science to create an independent committee of experts to study recycling the country's spent nuclear fuel. The DOE commissioned study would evaluate the costs, benefits, and risks of recycling spent nuclear fuel compared to the status quo of interim storage. Quote, for several decades, the federal government has failed to solve America's stranded nuclear waste problem. As of now, there are approximately 90,000 metric tons, 198,416,000 pounds of stranded spent nuclear fuel sitting in limbo, end quote. Monica Perales, in-house counsel for Fasken Oil and Ranch, told the Reporter-Telegram. She continued, quote, recently the Nuclear Regulatory Commission crafted a temporary solution in licensing private storage of the nation's entire inventory of spent nuclear fuel in the Permian Basin. This only kicks the can further down the road while burdening our state and region, end quote. As a result, the state of Texas, Fasken Oil and Ranch, and the Permian Basin Coalition challenged the NRC's actions as an illegitimate abuse of their authority, she said. Quote, as we stated to the courts, because this issue is of such economic and political significance, it is the responsibility of Congress to determine how to deal with America's nuclear waste problem. It is an overwhelming burden that requires a permanent solution, which is exactly what Senator Cruz has proposed by his reprocessing bill. Clearly, he was listening to his constituents, and his promises have real value, end quote. Domestic recycling has the potential to reduce the amount of storage needed for spent nuclear fuel, reduce the country's dependence on nuclear fuel imported from hostile nations like Russia, and provide another supply of rare elements and isotopes used for certain medicines and advanced technologies, Cruz and Heinrich noted in announcing the legislation. Upon introduction, Cruz said, quote, no individual state should be responsible for bearing the brunt of nuclear waste accumulation. In order to advance American energy, we need to find ways to maximize our cleanest baseload energy source. I am proud to work with Senator Heinrich on this bipartisan legislation to study how new technologies can harness the full potential of recycled nuclear energy. Innovation is key to making America energy dominant, end quote. Heinrich said, quote, we need to find ways to provide clean and reliable energy for all Americans. This bill will help identify safe and secure methods of recycling our spent nuclear fuel, which can increase domestic clean energy resources, lower costs, and deliver good-paying jobs for Americans, end quote. Life tributes. Fosta Faye Ramirez, 10-13-1940 to 9-24-2024. Fosta Faye Ramirez, 83, passed away September 24, 2024. She leaves behind the love of her life, Jesse Alcocer, her daughter, Sandra Salcido Beeson, her siblings, Cruz Ramirez Winger and Emilio Ramirez, her three grandchildren, Monica Martinez, Margarita Munoz Medina, and Brian Beeson, and her four great-grandchildren, Brianna Salgado, Lena Faye Martinez, Cassandra Inc., and Paul Medina Jr. Faye was preceded in death by parents Lazaro and Cruz Ramirez and brothers Ramon, Fidel, Andres, and Tori Ramirez. Faye was born Sunday, October 13, 1940, in Midland, Texas, to Lazaro and Cruz Ramirez. A celebration of life will be held October 13th in Midland, Texas. Contact family for specifics. Barbara Rodriguez Rivera, 12-4-1934 to 9-24-2024. Barbara Rodriguez Rivera, 89, of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully at her home on Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. Barbara was born in Fort McCavitt, Texas, on December 4th, 1934, to Genoveva Ramon Rodriguez and Jose San Miguel Rodriguez. She was the oldest of five children with two brothers, Damasio and Jose, and two sisters, Mary Helen and Janie. Barbara is preceded in death by her beloved husband of 73 years, Preston, son Benjamin, her parents, her brother Jose, and her two sisters. She is survived by her son Samuel, Martina, and daughter Emma, all of Midland, Texas. Her brother, Damasio Rodriguez, Ava, of Mission, Texas. Grandchildren, Adrian, Ben Jr., Luis, Amy. Joseph, Christina, Ronald. Patricia, Nick, Blessing. Great-grandchildren, Matthias, Heather. Ashley, Alex, Aaron, AJ. Devin, Noah, Brianna, Elisa. Abigail, Samantha, Sydney, Emma, and Silas. Great-great-grandchildren, Jaden, Corinne, Rowan, Winry, and numerous nieces and nephews. Visitation will be held on Sunday, September 29th, 2024, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m., with rosary recited at 7 o'clock p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be celebrated at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, September 30th, 2024, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church and Shrine, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Pallbearers are Adrian Rivera, Ben Rivera Jr., Luis Rivera, Joseph Rivera, Nick Rivera, and Ronald Ferris. The family would like to express their heartfelt gratitude to Hospice of Midland for their care, support, and compassion. Mike Villa Romero, 10/17/1958 to 8/21/2024. Mike Villa Romero, 65, passed away on August 21, 2024, in Wichita, Kansas. He was born to Dolores V. and Maria Villa Romero in Staten, Texas, on October 17, 1958. Preceded in death by his parents, survived by siblings Joe Yolanda Romero, John Annette Romero, Mayanne Romero, Josephine Alisto Alonzo, and Sam Maria Romero, all of Texas. Two grandchildren and many extended family and friends. Services at a later date. To share a condolence, please visit www.affinityallfaithsmortuary.com. Arthur R. Langrick. Arthur R. Langrick, 91, of Midland, passed away September 26, 2024. Memorial service is pending for mid-October. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Oil Report. Researchers study environmental pressures on oil companies. Various methods of pressuring the oil and gas industry into making environmental improvements can be effective or counterproductive. Researchers at the University of Texas at Austin's LBJ Cockrell School studied how industry firms respond to external pressure with a focus on the issue of routine flaring. Nick Willems, a PhD graduate of the Cockrell School of Engineering, first author of the paper, told the Reporter-Telegram that voluntary efforts can, in some cases, have a more positive result than mandated performance. For example, he said a flaring standard of 0.05 resulted in 10% less intensity than a stricter mandated standard of 0.025. The easier standard resulted in more flaring, but it was a reasonable threshold that attracted more industry participation, he explained. Quote, there is still a place for mandatory standards, certainly, but there also needs to be commensurate levels of fees and consequences, end quote, he said. Willem said the study also looked at the trend toward certifying natural gas as responsibly produced and found it had the biggest single impact on environmental outcomes on the industry. That's because there were shareholders willing to pay a premium to invest in the certified company, and consumers were willing to pay a premium for the production, he said. Certifying production is one way to open new markets, such as in Europe and Asia, who want to buy production that means certain thresholds. But beyond that economic motivation, he said companies also see it as the right thing to do and maintain their social license to operate. The study also looked at methane leaks, which happen in far more places than flaring, but, like flaring, have environmental consequence. Given the commitments announced by individual firms and organizations like the Texas Flaring and Methane Coalition, he said the industry is clearly motivated to address environmental performance. The study highlighted the impact of activism, shareholder and consumer pressure, and peer effects in generating changes to environmental performance. These various strategies can help policymakers craft effective regulations to drive decarbonization, while activities can maximize their impact by focusing on the worst performers or largest firms. OnPath expands methane sensing network in Permian. Recent acquisitions have opened up an expansion opportunity for OnPath Technologies. The Denver-based provider of methane detection and data services is expanding its methane sensing network across Vital Energy's assets in the Permian Basin. Vital recently completed the acquisition of Point Energy Partners' assets in the Delaware Basin in partnership with Northern Oil and Gas. OnPath and Vital already had an existing relationship, and Vital chose to expand OnPath's network into the new assets, and the expansion will cover a significant portion of Vital's Permian Basin operations. In a statement announcing the expansion, Ian Dickinson, OnPath's chief executive officer, commented, quote, cost-effective, durable options for oil and gas operators are the key to methane management asset-wide or even basin-wide. Expanding the OnPath methane sensing network in the Permian Basin is important, since it will provide the emissions data necessary to support ultra-low methane energy production, end quote. OnPath works with multiple operators and companies in the Permian Basin, among them ConocoPhillips, Triple Crown Resources, and Vital. Deadline on waste rule comments extended over public concerns. Texans have until October 15th to comment on proposed amendments to statewide Rule 8 regarding waste from oil and gas operations. The Railroad Commission has jurisdiction over waste from oil and gas operations, such as rock and other material pulled up from the ground during drilling, but also waste from other operations that include geothermal, carbon sequestration, and brine mining wells. Some, including landowners like John Mabee and Z&T Cattle Company, have submitted comments calling for stronger regulations. Other concerned groups are also expressing concern over the proposed amendments. In preliminary drafts of the proposals sent out last October, industry and commission staff recommended requiring landowner consent, setbacks from sensitive areas, surface water and groundwater protection, and liner integrity, including not using liners that have been compromised. The current draft now requires pits to be lined only if they're within 50 feet of groundwater with no explicit construction requirements or even liner requirements for areas with groundwater as shallow as 51 feet. Quote, it's important for landowners and people living next to these facilities to have an opportunity for informed consent before pits and commercial facilities are constructed. This rule doesn't offer that in most cases, end quote, said Virginia Palacios, executive director of Commission Shift, in a statement urging concerned parties to comment on the proposed amendments. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram his association is supportive of efforts to update and modernize the rules and is still evaluating the proposals and getting feedback from members. Quote, we will likely offer some recommendations, end quote, he said. Quote, I'm optimistic we'll end up with an improved rule, end quote. He noted that the commission is working on how to establish a framework for overseeing commercial disposal, which includes reuse and recycling of produced water. Quote, that's something that was not contemplated 40 years ago, end quote, he said. The current regulations oversee the same oil field waste but offer different groundwater protection standards. Commercial pits, which store and sell produced water to companies, or are used by exploration and production companies to recycle their own water, account for 20% to 30% of all drilling waste disposal. They are used for permanent disposal, offer leak detection, groundwater monitoring, and have consent from landowners. These pits also monitored continually and are frequently inspected. Reserve pits account for 70% to 80% of all drilling waste disposal and, like commercial pits, are used for permanent disposal. But there is no engineering, documenting, or tracking of reserve pits, which do not require liners, offer no leak detection or groundwater monitoring, do not require landowner notification or consent, and are only inspected if a failure is reported. Diamondback kinetic increase interest in EPIC. Consolidation among Permian Basin exploration and production companies is impacting the midstream companies who move their output. Diamondback Energy and Kinetic Holdings announced this week that together they have acquired a 30% equity interest in EPIC Crude Holdings, an affiliate of EPIC Midland Midstream Holdings. The two now each own 27.5% of EPIC Crude. EPIC Midstream continues to own 45% equity interest in and manage EPIC Crude operations. In the aftermath of its acquisition of Endeavor, Diamondback also announced it is converting its existing commitment on EPIC Crude into a significantly larger volume commitment of 200,000 barrels per day to accommodate the additional crude barrels. Kinetic is also entering into a new transportation arrangement with EPIC Crude and a new connection between Kinetic's crude gathering system and the EPIC Crude pipeline. The combined long-term volume commitments from Diamondback and Kinetic are expected to commence in 2025 and extend until 2035. Fully supported by minimum volume commitments and representing over 33% of EPIC Crude's volume capacity, EPIC Crude continues to transport more than 600,000 barrels per day and has secured MVCs, or contracts, for approximately 90% of 2025 total volumes, while substantially extending the weighted average contract life. Quote, the transaction makes sense for both Diamondback and Kinetic, end quote. Ajay Bakshani with East Daily Analytics told the Reporter-Telegram. With Corpus Christi being the premier destination for Permian crude, given the higher quality export terminals there, so it makes sense Diamondback wants to ensure pipeline capacity to that particular market, said. For Kinetic, quote, it is a good pipe, and although its core business is in natural gas processing, providing a solution for its customers on the crude side could help them bundle services, attract new customers, and ensure existing customers have capacity across the commodities, end quote. Bakshani wrote he and his fellow analysts suspect it was Chevron who sold its 30% stake to Diamondback and Kinetic. While he said the announcement did not specify a value, a look at multiples relative to other crude transactions implies a value of $2.8 billion, including any debt. Quote, thus, a 30% stake nets a $843 million transaction value, including assumption of debt, end quote, Bakshani wrote.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, September 28th. Researchers study environmental pressures on oil companies. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. Various methods of pressuring the oil and gas industry into making environmental improvements can be effective or counterproductive. Researchers at the University of Texas at Austin's LBJ School and Cockrell School studied how industry firms respond to external pressure with a focus on the issue of routine flaring. Nick Willems, a PhD graduate of the Cockrell School of Engineering, first author of the paper, told the Reporter-Telegram that voluntary efforts can, in some cases, have a more positive result than mandated performance. For example, he said a flaring standard of 0.5 resulted in 10% less intensity than a stricter mandated standard of 0.25. The easier standard resulted in more flaring, but it was a reasonable threshold that attracted more industry participation, he explained. Quote, there is still a place for mandatory standards, certainly, but there also needs to be commensurate levels of fees and consequences, he said. Willems said the study also looked at the trend toward certifying natural gas as responsibly produced and found it had the biggest single impact on environmental outcomes on the industry. That's because there were shareholders willing to pay a premium to invest in the certified company, and consumers were willing to pay a premium for the production, he said. Certifying production is one way to open new markets, such as in Europe and Asia, who want to buy production that meets certain thresholds. But beyond that economic motivation, he said companies also see it as the right thing to do and maintain their social license to operate. The study also looked at methane leaks, which happen in far more places than flaring, but, like flaring, have environmental consequence. Given the commitments announced by individual firms and organizations, like the Texas Flaring and Methane Coalition, he said the industry is clearly motivated to address environmental performance. The study highlighted the impact of activism, shareholder and consumer pressure, and peer efforts in generating changes to environmental performance. These various strategies can help policymakers craft effective regulations to drive decarbonization, while activities can maximize their impact by focusing on the worst performers or largest firms. Diamondback Kinetic increased interest in EPIC. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Consolidation among Permian Basin exploration and production companies is impacting the midstream companies who move their output. Diamondback Energy and Kinetic Holdings announced this week that together they have acquired a 30% equity interest in EPIC Crude Holdings, an affiliate of EPIC Midstream Holdings. The two now each own 27.5% of EPIC Crude. EPIC Midstream continues to own 45% equity interest in and manage EPIC Crude operations. In the aftermath of its acquisition of Endeavor, Diamondback also announced it is converting its existing commitment on EPIC Crude into a significantly larger volume commitment of 200,000 barrels per day to accommodate the additional crude barrels. Kinetic is also entering into a new transportation arrangement with EPIC Crude and a new connection between Kinetic's crude gathering system and the EPIC crude pipeline. The combined long-term volume commitments from Diamondback and Kinetic are expected to commence in 2025 and extend until 2035, fully supported by minimum volume commitments and representing over 33% of EPIC Crude's volume capacity. EPIC Crude continues to transport more than 600,000 barrels per day and has secured MVCs, or contracts for approximately 90% of 2025 total volumes, while substantially extending the weighted average contract life. Quote, "The transaction makes sense for both Diamondback and Kinetic," A.J. Bakshani with East Daily Analytics told the reporter Telegram. With Corpus Christi being the premier destination for Permian crude, given the higher quality export terminals there, so it makes sense Diamondback wants to ensure pipeline capacity to that particular market, Bakshani said. For Kinetic, quote, "It is a good pipe, and although its core business is in natural gas processing, providing a solution for its customers on the crude side could help them bundle services, attract new customers, and ensure existing customers have capacity across the commodities," end quote. Bakshani wrote he and his fellow analysts suspect it was Chevron who sold its 30% stake to Diamondback and Kinetik. While he said the announcement did not specify a value, a look at multiples relative to other crude transactions implies a value of $2.8 billion, including any debt. Quote, thus, a 30% stake nets a $843 million transaction value, including assumption of debt, Bakshani wrote. Deadline on waste rule comments extended over public concerns. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Texans have until October 15th to comment on proposed amendments to statewide Rule 8 regarding waste from oil and gas operations. The Railroad Commission has jurisdiction over waste from oil and gas operations, such as rock and other material pulled up from the ground during drilling, but also waste from other operations that include geothermal, carbon sequestration, and brine mining wells. Some, including landowners like John Mabee and Z&T Cattle Company, have submitted comments calling for stronger regulations. Other concerned groups are also expressing concern over the proposed amendments. In preliminary drafts of the proposals sent out last October, industry and commission staff recommended requiring landowner consent, setbacks from sensitive areas, surface water and groundwater protection, and liner integrity, including not using liners that have been compromised. The current draft now requires pits to be lined only if they're within 50 feet of groundwater, with no explicit construction requirements or even liner requirements for areas with groundwater as shallow as 51 feet. Quote, it's important for landowners and people living next to these facilities to have an opportunity for informed consent before pits and commercial facilities are constructed. This rule doesn't offer that in most cases, said Virginia Palacios, executive director of Commission Shift, in a statement urging concerned parties to comment on the proposed amendments. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram his association is supportive of efforts to update and modernize the rules and is still evaluating the proposals and getting feedback from members. Quote, we will likely offer some recommendations, he said. I'm optimistic we'll end up with an improved rule, end quote. He noted the commission is working on how to establish a framework for overseeing commercial disposal, which includes reuse and recycling of produced water. Quote, that's something that was not contemplated 40 years ago, he said. The current regulations oversee the same oil field waste, but offer different groundwater protection standards. Commercial pits, which store and sell produced water to companies, or are used by exploration and production companies to recycle their own water, account for 20 to 30% of all drilling waste disposal. They are used for permanent disposal, offer leak detection, groundwater monitoring, and have consent from landowners. These pits are also monitored continually and are frequently inspected. Reserve pits account for 70 to 80% of all drilling waste disposal and, like commercial pits, are used for permanent disposal. But there is no engineering, documenting, or tracking of reserve pits, which do not require liners, offer no leak detection or groundwater monitoring, do not require landowner notification or consent, and are only inspected if a failure is reported.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.